Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, everyone. This is the science-based paganism podcast, where we address the world and view the world from a naturalistic perspective, in that it is made up of matter and energy that follows physical laws. And we practice mythic, poetic, and ritual activities in order to enhance our lives, make us happier and wiser, and to help bring about a better world. My name is Mark, and I'm one of your hosts.
And welcome. My name is Yucca.
Today, we're going to talk about community, a topic that is really kind of at the top of people's minds right now because we're being deprived of it with the coronavirus shelter-in-place orders and social distancing.
That's right, yeah. So we were talking a little bit before we hit the record button here on some of the issues that we want to make sure to address, because the idea of community and even the expression of building community can be such a buzzword at this point, and it doesn't always have a, sometimes when people say it, it doesn't really have much of a meaning, but we want to look at what does it really mean and why is it important?
Absolutely. One of the things that I find pretty grating about kind of modern business language is that they've taken the word community and they've turned it into market sectors. So they talk about a community of people who buy mustard. That's not a community to me. That's just people who like mustard.
Yeah. And
it's fine to identify that market segment if you're in the business of selling mustard, but it has nothing to do with building community. In my opinion, community is about finding affiliation with others who share some of your values and your interests, and making common cause with them in a social group. And that can be a very far-flung social group, like the Atheopaganism Facebook group, which is a couple thousand people spread all over the world. Or it can be a small, close-knit group like a ritual circle or coven, who are in contact with one another all the time and really share a deep, an emotional bond with one another. That's what I think of when I think of a community.
Yeah. That speaks to my understanding as well, that there is some shared identity between the group, but also some sort of action or sharing between the group too. And it's not just that one that we all share an identity, but there's some sort of interaction between us.
Yes.
Right? It's not just that we all buy mustard, but we have some discussion and we get together to enjoy the mustard.
And to talk about mustard and trade various kinds of mustard because we're all mustard enthusiasts. Yes. Or stamp collectors or whatever it is.
Yeah. And from that, there's some emotional value. And I think that there's a physical and psychological value as well as social creatures.
You know, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
I was going to say, as animals, we are programmed to seek that social interaction. And we literally go crazy without it.
Yes, which is one reason why our social punishments often involve segregation of people away from others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the various things that we do in order to discourage people from doing what we don't want them to do is to inflict various kinds of pain on them. And this is one of the worst. Solitary confinement is considered in many parts of the world to be torture. Mm-hmm. And I tend to agree with that. I don't think you get anything beneficial for society out of holding people in solitary confinement. I've been listening to a psychologist and kind of a neurology thinker named John Vervaeke. He has a series of videos on YouTube about addressing the meaning crisis, as he terms it,
mm-hmm.
we're having in our society right now. And one of the things that he points out that is very interesting about humanity is that some 8,000 to 10,000 years ago, we hit an extreme evolutionary bottleneck where we died down to as few as maybe 10,000 individuals. There were very few of us left. And what that meant is that we had to develop means of getting along with people that were not in our group, strangers. And when you think about it, the fact that people can live in cities today is truly remarkable as animals.
Mm-hmm.
So being around lots of strangers that are not in your little kin group is not what mammals do. It is really not what they do.
Yes.
So it's remarkable that we developed rituals like handshaking and exchange of gifts and honorifics and all that kind of thing in order to bridge the gap of strangeness between ourselves and people that belonged to other bands, because we had to in order for the species to survive.
Hmm.
Very fascinating stuff. I really encourage people to look up the videos on YouTube. It's John Vervaeke, V-E-R-V-A-E-K-E. And but you can find it just by looking up The Crisis of Meaning.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm not familiar with him, but the dates that you mentioned there, that sounds like that corresponds with the end of the last ice age.
Exactly.
So a time of a pretty significant climate change and the extinction of a lot of the megafauna.
Yes, yes. And the question, of course, will always be, to what degree did humans have to do with the extinction of those megafauna? Because we were hunting a lot. But
yeah, that's a subject of great debate.
Yes, it is. It is.
Yeah.
And it becomes a subject of great debate again when you start talking about humans arriving in the Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, within 1,000 years after humans arrived in the Western Hemisphere, all of the megafauna were extinct. And the question is, was that due to climate change? Was that due to hunting, some combination thereof? But yeah, that's a topic for another time.
That is. It's a fun one, though. I love that one. So.
Me too. I'm fascinated by it. And this is one of the things that I really love about being a non-theistic pagan, is that curiosity is one of our values. We love the world, and part of loving the world is just really being interested in how it works and what its history is and what this is all about. So anyway, John Vervaeke, I encourage you to look into him. The only caveat that I would have about him is that he's done a couple of videos with Jordan Peterson, who I do not have a very high opinion of. Jordan Peterson is a psychologist, but he is turned into this sort of social thinker that is kind of lionized on the right. And his opinion is that a stern father model is necessary in order for a society to thrive, which I think is utter horseshit. But I've done a bunch of research this afternoon, and I have not seen any indication that Vervaeke subscribes to this theory. So with that caveat, I encourage you to at least look at the first video, because it's very, very interesting about how humans have evolved.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, maybe we could put that in the show notes, just a link to his name. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, and to the series, I think it's called Confronting the Crisis of Meaning. It's about 10 episodes, but that are an hour apiece. But the first one gives an overview of what the course is, and so that'll give you a sense about whether this is something that interests you or not.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, well, we'll look that up and add that in the notes for folks.
You bet. So
how did we get there? We got there from community, right?
Right, right. Because it's mysterious how humans got to be so gregarious. I mean, we are so gregarious that we bring other little mammals and animals into our family circles.
Mm-hmm.
We just are so fond of other creatures. Even fish and reptiles and things that you would not think people would develop a lot of affect for, they nonetheless do.
And that's one of our stereotypes in many sci-fis, where when you have multiple kinds of aliens, that humans were the ones who get along with everybody and were interested in bringing everyone in.
You know, it's really interesting. When you say that, it hasn't occurred to me before, but in fantasy tropes, kind of swords and sorcery fantasy, like Dungeons and Dragons and things like that, very often that is the case. The humans mm-hmm. are sort of the bridge builders. They mate with many other species.
So they have the half-orcs to half-elves, yeah.
Right. They build communities that include members of other races. So it's an interesting thing. And obviously we contend with a lot of tension and conflict within our societies as well, particularly around racism and sexism and other kinds of discrimination against people who are seen as other. But I think we should put that in the context of the fact that it's remarkable that humans will get along with anybody that isn't like themselves at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think those stereotypes that we're talking about, or those tropes rather, are a reflection of people recognizing that and valuing that.
Yes. Yes. Because honestly, it's a beautiful thing. It is a really beautiful thing that humans are able to open their hearts in this way and engage with those that are so different, even different species. In a way that is kind and mutually supportive and fond. Mm-hmm. It's a really kind of remarkable thing.
Yeah.
So community building, when we think about it, it's what people do. In any given habitation of people, you will find people looking for others that share their affiliations so that they can glue together and mutually support one another in those affiliations.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to non-theist paganism, I think our impulse is to do that as well, but it's very difficult because we're spread all over the world.
Yeah. And I think recently, it wasn't, well, we've talked about before that the kind of shift in paganism in general, but I, every single week, come across people who go, I didn't know that there were other pagans like this. I didn't know this was a thing. So that first challenge is even the exposure that
yes.
people know that there's other people like them. We're out there.
Exactly. To me, those are some of the most rewarding and heartwarming moments of being a part of this path. You know, being at Pantheacon and having people sidle up to me and say, you know, I absolutely agree with you. I don't dare tell my coven, but thank you so much for what you're doing. Or people that have said, you know, I didn't know there was a word for this. I've always felt this way, but I thought I was just a weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
It's really rewarding.
I had with it is I started using the word non-theist and I thought I made it up. And then I heard a bunch of other people using it and went, oh, okay, great. So uh-huh. I couldn't have been the first that these people have no idea who I am. So lots of people have been using this.
You know, I think my experience was somewhat the same. I just had a major research failure when I first started devising the path of atheopaganism, because I went looking for something like it and I didn't find it. And it turned out that there was humanistic paganism and there was naturalistic paganism. There were all these, there were websites and paths and writings that were all about a non-theistic approach to paganism. And I didn't find any of them. So I reinvented the wheel. I went through the process independently of coming up with this and then only discovered later that it was part of a larger movement.
Well, I hope that now we're starting to get, there are more blogs, there's more videos, there's more of that out there that can hopefully catch people when they're searching for things like that.
Yes, yes. And the irony is that for those that have a real problem with it, and we don't need to go into the reasons why people have a problem with it now, but for those who do have a problem with it, the fact that they spark up these debates attracts attention. It actually...
Any press is good press.
It brings more people into the circle of those that are considering this as an option.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know if any press is good press, but certainly...
Well, that's an old expression, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. But I think that the opportunity just to see that this is an option that some people are availing themselves of is a good one. So let's talk about building community. First of all, what is it that we want? Because I think it really varies from person to person. The true introvert, usually wants kind of a constellation of people that are kind of out there that they can go and connect with in very small groups, one-on-one or two-on-one. And then they can go home and be back in their safe place.
But get that moment of validation and recognition before returning to that place of rest. Yeah.
Yes. And of course, even introverts build families. They have partners and they have children and relatives and so forth. Others are really interested in building an activity group, like a ritual circle or a coven. I have one of those that's been together for almost 30 years, and they're my family. They're my closest people. Part of which is because I don't deal with my real blood family at all. They lost out on me. but even though we only get together about every 6 weeks or so, it's an opportunity for me to check in with those people who are so dear to me, and then to make rituals together around the changes of the seasons and the passage of moments in our lives that are meaningful and memorable. It adds to the depth of life. So I think people, as they think about building community, it's helpful to ask yourself, well, what kind of community do I really want?
Yeah. And I think that also we don't always know.
Sure.
Right? Sometimes it takes experiencing it. And sometimes we don't even know that type of community can exist until we experience it or build it.
Right.
So that, I think that part, that self-reflection is an important component for the individual.
Yes. I had created an event that was going to happen over the weekend of the summer solstice this year, but I've had to cancel it because of the coronavirus. It was called Midsummer Dawn. And I just promoted it as a pagan campout. Non-denominational, going to a beautiful area where we can have beautiful hikes and we can share meals together. And we can have rituals in the evening. We'll do a bardic circle one night. And more of a summer solstice ritual the other night, and just to see, you know, who would gravitate towards something like that. I mean, I haven't explicitly promoted it as a non-theist event, but it would be a non-theist event. And so my thinking is to kind of cast the net wider to see who might find value in what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm really disappointed that we're not going to be able to do that event this year.
Yeah. That sounds fun. Maybe, hopefully, fingers crossed for next year, but that's, yeah.
I hope so.
Now, when you say cast the net wider, are you speaking about outside of the community of people who would identify as being pagan? Or
not so much. I mean, I've promoted the event as a pagan event.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a pretty broad
group of people.
Category. Yeah. I mean, that includes, we've talked about the big umbrella before. That includes lots of different kinds of people with radically different beliefs.
Yeah.
And I'm all for that. You can have whatever beliefs you want to. That's great. But if you want to come and enjoy this particular thing that I'm doing with me, then welcome. Let's do that together.
Wonderful.
So Arwen, do you have thoughts about, like, how would you do community building in your local area? If you were going to broaden out from your family into more of a, like a ritual circle or a broader community of people in your local area, what are the steps you would take? I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's actually, part of that's a little bit tricky because I actually am, I am a true introvert.
Uh-huh.
So I'm also, so the in-person social interaction is very challenging for me. Uh-huh. And it's something that I make myself do because I value it, but I at least feel awkward as hell.
Oh.
So, and that's something that I've come to, you know, to accept about myself and not beat myself up too much about it. But I, you know, I do have ASD, and that's something that has been, for me, a challenge throughout my life. So role-wise, I often am more of a, I like the organizing role, but not the being one of the charismatic personalities that help bring communities together. And nice. I think that communities can be formed without that type of charisma. And I'm not saying I don't have charisma, but I don't think I have the bringing people together, quote unquote, leader charisma, which I think that can often be helpful in building a community, or at least keeping that initial spark of the community. And it can often be passed between people.
I think that's true. I do think that it's a little easier when you have a shiny person that is easy for people to go, oh, look, a shiny person. I'm going to go over there and see what they're about.
Yeah.
I mean, what you say surprises me a little bit because you're so engaging by video. We've never met in person. But you seem very self-confident and very engaging by video. And so, but I mean, I believe you.
Well, thank you. It's nice to hear that. But it is a conscious, it is something that I have worked very hard at to try to be present with people in a way that isn't too intense for them. Because mm-hmm. I think that's the direction that I end up going, is a little too much eye contact, too much focusing and latching on. So I appreciate your comments, but do recognize that it is a challenge. So,
Well, self-knowledge is good.
Yeah. I guess let me circle back a little bit though, because that could have been more, I took that on a very personal direction, but in terms of a creating in a little bit more of a general sense, I think starting with finding the commonality somewhere. So mm-hmm. a place that that my family might start is with the family part. Is that reaching at finding other families, just connecting for maybe a solstice or just a, this is on hiatus at the moment, but we do a homeschool forest group with our uh-huh. kids, right? And connecting with families that way and finding, so that's community that isn't necessarily pagan, but from that, I think you can often find people who are or connect with. There's a lot more pagans out there than we think.
Yes, it's true. And especially in more conservative communities, there's a lot of people that just, they aren't going to admit to you that they've got these funny practices.
Yeah. Or it doesn't come up. You know, for me, I don't hide it, but, mm-hmm. but why would I mention it when, you know, that's, it's not the subject that we're talking about.
Right. Right.
So.
Yeah, that totally makes sense to me. So, I think that we're at a very interesting moment when it comes to community building, because we're all in these shelter-in-place requirements now, and so we're not getting the social interaction that many of us really want.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news about that, I think, is that we're becoming more familiarized with the tools that we can use to interact with people remotely.
Yeah.
And that's going to change things permanently. After this is all over, when there's a vaccine for the coronavirus and we're no longer subject to it, there's still not going to be nearly as much business travel as there used to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's still not going to be, there's still going to be a lot more video conferencing than there has been previously, because people have been hungry enough for social interaction that they've overcome whatever obstacles they had internally to learning about how to do video conferencing, and so now they can do it.
I think it would be much more normalized with the kids too.
Yes, because if you do have problems getting yourself set up with video conferencing, there's always an 8-year-old you can ask who will completely solve all the problems for you and have you just right lined up.
That's true too. I meant in terms of because the kids are being, so much of the education is happening online now.
Yes.
And social groups, right? Lots mm-hmm. of gaming happening online, or that forest group I told you about right now, we're meeting up and doing coloring pages together, you know, the little 4-year-old sitting in front of the screen and coloring their page and showing each other.
Oh, that's great.
So for us, we're, as adults, we're finding that we can do so much of our business, our jobs online and our conferences online, and they're finding that that's just, I mean, they experience time so differently than us.
Yes.
They've been online for ages now.
Right. Yeah, for their whole lives.
Yeah. And even for the older kids, the, you know, the 12-year-olds, the teenagers, it's a longer time for them than us.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I didn't get a computer till I was in graduate school. so, you know, everything that I did for my bachelor's degree, everything that I did in all of my competitive collegiate debating and high school debating, all that stuff was analog research, card catalogs, journal abstracts, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a lot easier now. It's a whole lot easier now. There's so much information available just at our fingertips.
Yeah, you just have to roll over and pick up your phone in bed.
Yes. And what we're finding is that one another are also at our fingertips if we just reach out to connect.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it's going to be different, but I think one of the things that I'm really interested in, this is kind of a complete tangent, but people are starting to do rituals online.
I've through done video a few of those, content. Yeah.
And I don't have much experience with that, but people are apparently finding mechanisms, they're finding techniques that they find actually emotionally and psychologically effective for doing these kinds of rituals online. And I really think that's something that I would like to learn a lot more about, especially because the Atheopagan community is spread so far all over the world.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's something we should work a little bit more on. I think we've got a good opportunity for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's some really nice advantages to, there's some disadvantages, but things that can be advantages as well for being physically separated, for initially having a sense of safety when you're first joining a ritual, when you're uncomfortable. There is that layer of separation that the technology gives us, that screen gives us. And once you have been able to relax and slip into it, that distance between the screen almost feels like it disappears.
Yes. Yeah, I really agree with that. I mean, I know that in many kind of introductory pagan circles, there are people who show up and then they leave early because they just don't feel comfortable in their own skins, and they feel like what's being required of them is too embarrassing or too revealing or just not safe. Mm-hmm. Being on a video call gives you that additional sense of remove.
Yeah.
The question is, how do you get the engagement at that additional sense of remove? And I don't have the answers to that, honestly. I think there are people that know a lot more about it than I do.
Yeah. Well, I think we should definitely return to this particular topic, because this one is fascinating, is that the idea of ritual and on the screen. Because if we continue talking about it, I think this will be a 3-hour topic.
Yes,
a 3-hour episode.
Probably,
yeah.
Right.
So,
so I guess the last thing that I would say about community is that I really encourage people to build some. Even before this happened and we were forced to sequester ourselves in our houses, we were in a society where there's a tremendous amount of loneliness,
mm-hmm.
a tremendous amount of alienation. And people are hungry, I think, for someone to look them in the eye. And so there's some materials about how to organize events and so forth on the atheopaganism.org website. Those are some resources that are available to folks. And otherwise, just be thinking about how you can create a welcoming space and invite others to come into it. It doesn't have to be heavy-duty ritual. Doesn't have to be ritual at all at first, or ever necessarily. But building connection with people is something that most people find very rewarding and that adds a lot to the tenor of their lives.
Hmm. I think that speaks to the questions that we wanted to cover, unless there's anything else you would like to add in there.
No, community is fun, but don't get any diseases.
That's an important thing to keep in mind these days. Any days, I suppose, but
yes, it is.
It's definitely on our minds now.
It certainly is.
Well, this was a great conversation, Mark. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Arwen, as always. I really appreciate it. Okay. So until the next, this is The Wonder. I'm Mark.
And I'm Yekka.
And we'll see you next time.